Who wrote that? Tony Blair wrote that.
That was Philip. That was Philip Sands. Your comments. We have about 30 seconds on this particular clip.
Well, you know, that is that shows exactly the kind of dynamic that was going on. Essentially, they didn't want to hear the facts. It remains to be seen why the decision was changed about the legality of the war. And Tony Blair recently came out with this so-called non-apology apology to try and, you know, essentially avert this kind of news.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Iranian-born British filmmaker Amir Amirani, director and producer of the documentary We Are Many. This is Democracy Now! That ends our broadcast. Happy birthday to Kieran Meadows. Democracy Now! Is hiring a development director. Check our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
WHFR's Fall Benefit is Saturday, November 7th. Join us for an evening of live blues music featuring Danny Croha, the Dale Robertson Band, Tasha Owens, and our host band, Big Al and his blues crew, with special guest, Ivory Darnell. For only a $5 donation, you can support WHFR and have a great time. 21 and over, please. That's Saturday, November 7th at the Whiskey Bar on Warren, just west of Outer Drive in Detroit. Let the good times roll.
This is WHFR, Terrebonne. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. How are you doing out there? This is Jay Koronek, station advisor at WHFR and host of this public affairs show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. However you're listening to us, it's our election wrap-up special. Yes, every November we do this. Some years it's bigger than others. This year it's very important. How important? Well, here's a comment from last week from Jack Lessenberry, who is reminding you to vote. Now, of course, it's too late now if you are registered and didn't vote. But I hope to make you a little bit guilty with this. And then we'll go over election results everywhere other than Dearborn, because remember, Dearborn, we don't need no election, because we already have everything that's great. In any event, here's Jack Lessenberry's comment. Take a listen.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Today is election day, if you hadn't noticed, and the safest prediction anyone can make is that turnout will be terrible. The vast majority of eligible voters won't vote at all. This is what they call an off-off-year election, meaning that no major statewide or national races are on the ballot, no president, governors, or senators. But if anyone thinks this is not an important election, think again. As the late great Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, used to say, all politics is local. Tip borrowed the phrase from an old Washington reporter who coined it, but hey, that's research. Tip was, in fact, more accurate than he probably knew. I hate to say this, but your one vote is unlikely to decide a presidential election. And, as we've all painfully learned, there's no guarantee that the people we vote for will do what they promise anyway. However, your vote can have much more impact on the local level. You can have a significant say in whether to buy new technology for your schools or tax yourselves to fix the sidewalks, and if you vote yes, they really will get fixed. Your local mayor is also probably more willing to listen to you than your congressman. This year, I think there's somewhat more awareness of how important local elections are. This is due, perhaps in part, to the utter failure of the legislature to address many of our most pressing needs, such as the roads. But there are also several truly significant elections. Disgraced lawmakers Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat are trying to get their old jobs back less than 2 months after they were thrown out of the legislature. In Flint, Mayor Dane Walling is trying to win re-election in the aftermath of the city water scandal, where voters are asking what the mayor knew and when he knew it. There'll also be a primary election for a new legislator in Grand Rapids to replace Brandon Dillon, who quit to become chair of the state Democratic Party. Those are the headliners, but there are interesting and significant millage elections in dozens of places all over the state. Keego Harbor, a microscopic city in Oakland County, is holding a vote on a recreational marijuana ordinance, which might provide clues as to how a statewide referendum might go next year. There are tight, bitter, and intensely fought mayor and council elections all over the state. In tiny, sleepy Huntington Woods, a town run by a city manager, two slates of candidates for mayor and council are going at it like the world depended on it. In nearby Oak Park, Josh Klein, a former staffer for Corsair and Gamrat and later whistleblower in the scandal, is helping run another bitter mayoral campaign and has been accused by one local newspaper of putting out a misleading flyer and engaging in dirty tricks. I'm not going to try to sort that out, but you should if you live there. And no matter where you live, there's probably something worth voting for or against on today's ballot. So you really should vote. After all, even though this is almost a cliche, people did die to give you the right to do that.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
So we don't have the answers to all of those local elections, and it's really hard to find out promptly, too. Even some of the local papers don't have some of the local election results because either they haven't finished counting, or I guess they don't think it's a story important enough to cover. I'm sorry, but that's always true with local elections. People aren't concerned to vote. They're not concerned who won. And so the papers, I think they realize that, and so they don't put it in the headlines, if they cover it much, if at all. I mean, certainly Dearborn Press and Guide and Times Herald, they don't even do endorsements before the election anymore, as if they knew the better candidates from all their press coverage, which they don't do, so I guess they don't. So why should they do an endorsement since they don't really know anybody because they don't really cover anybody ongoing? Oh, they publish those press releases from the candidates. Yes, sirree, Bobby. But that doesn't mean they know anything about the candidates and how they really, what kind of people they are, what kind of morals they have, you know, and so on. I do know that in regard to Lessenberry's comment, the Corsair-Gamrat duo both did not, and it was sort of a Republican primary or whatever in this case for them. So they weren't up against Democrats. They were up against other Republicans. And they didn't win. Neither of them won to be the Republican nominee next time around, or the Republican replacement, let's say, for themselves. So anyway, and I'm not sure about the Flint mayor. But here's what we know about Downriver, and that's why our story is local news, local, we should call it. One point early on, we called the show Talk Talk, because that's all we did. We talked, and then we talked some more. But that was based on a indie rock song that was popular back in the 80s, I think. But in any event, here we go. And thanks to the News Herald, that is a Downriver paper, for publishing the full story. And shame on the same people who published the Dearborn Press and Guide for us, that they think, well, they don't care about Downriver, because that doesn't have anything to do with them. Well, of course it does. What matters most is right next door, and the city right next door is just as important as your own city, because it all comes back and forth. There's really no boundary lines. It's just one big place, you know, and good stuff, bad stuff happens and goes across the line. So let's take, and we'd like to know what other people are thinking in the same area within 10, 15 miles, 20 miles at most, right? Allen Park, let's try to go alphabetically in terms of the cities. And these are unofficial results because they were compiled last Wednesday or Thursday by the News Herald, which is newsherald.com. It's one of those sources I have to go to every week because, by golly, pressandguide.com, which is Dearborn Heights, just doesn't have enough coverage, enough stories for even my little one-hour program. In Allen Park, incumbent Mayor William B. Matakis has been reelected, I'd say handily, and Michael Mizzi, the clerk, reelected. I won't read the incumbents if they're reelected, okay, except for the mayors. Turning the page over, and in city council, you had to vote for not more than six. What was interesting, we had new people coming back on the Ann Arbor City Council. Four of them were incumbents. All the four incumbents returned, including Harry Cisco, well known to WHFR fans from blues fans from 20, 30 years ago, because he used to run a blues venue, one of the best in Detroit, that was down in Taylor, Michigan, which he sold. And then he tried to set up shop here in Dearborn with a classy blues venue. And that seemed to be a contradiction in terms. He, of course, he had a second owner, so he didn't have total control of what was happening. And that failed after a couple of years. But anyway, there he is, and he's continuing on the Ann Arbor City Council. Gail McLeod came up with 2,789 votes, the largest vote-getter, and not an incumbent. Kevin Rourke, also not an incumbent, joined Ann Arbor City Council. Probably one of the more significant things is that in City of Allen Park, too, it is restoring its property taxing capacity to the general operating taxing capacity that is going up to the maximum that they can do of 12.5 mils as originally approved in their charter, although reduced by the Headley Amendment, which is hurting us so badly because of the decline in 2008. But anyway, people said, put it back up and fix the sole purpose of reconstruction, resurfacing, repairing, maintaining, improving streets within the city for a period of 10 years. Okay? And in fact, it's going to generate an estimated $1.3 million just in the first year. That was approved, you might say narrowly, 2,500 some to 2,300 some. So for about less than 200 votes out of 5,000, it passed. So don't tell me it doesn't matter if you vote. Just what Lex Lessenberry was saying too. Locally, you can make a really big difference. One vote, and this, again, we're talking about 5% of the voters here, made that call. But the majority did. In the United States, we respect majorities, or at least pluralities anyway, if we have more than two candidates up. We respect it, and we follow that, and at least until the next election. In Dearborn Heights, right next door to Dearborn, City Council only had one of the two incumbents return. Lisa Hicks Clayton got the highest number of votes, and you could vote for three, but she got 4,000 votes, and she returns to the council. Two of the three incumbents were elected. Wasim, also known as Dave Abdallah, a real estate agent, I believe, who had the support of Mayor Politko, came in with 2,300. Although surprising to me, the second highest vote getter was the other incumbent, Ray Muscat, or Muscat. I was at the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights candidate forum that we broadcast here on WHFR later, and Ray seemed like a nice person, but I don't remember significantly anything he said. So he has a lot of friends, or people put him down as third choice instead of maybe some other people. You know, often people, and it's not the way it should be, but you vote against somebody by voting for somebody that you don't know. That's pretty silly, isn't it? But it happens. Troy Brown, who seemed nice enough and had some really interesting ideas, seemed to be a real local activist, just couldn't get the votes together, had 2,300 votes out of the total. And Netta Pigian, all public disclosure here, who is a member of WHFR's staff, has done some many talk shows for us over the years of one sort or the other, he came in last with only 2,200 votes. And we think, because everybody could vote three times, my guess would be, I can't say how many people voted. It just altogether, it's too hard to figure that out with five candidates, and you can vote for any three you want. I guess we just take the top three, and that would be about, eight or 9,000. But divide that by three. So it's only about 3,000 people voted there. And that's how the split came down, though. No, I guess at least 4,000 people had to vote because Lisa had to get at least one vote from everybody that voted. So 4,000 or 5,000, I guess, voted in Dearborn Heights for city council member. So there is a big change. There's two newbies and one longtime oldie there. No disrespect. Oldie but a goldie, Lisa, remember? Okay. And charter amendment. To amend the charter about publishing official notices, can they do it on the internet? Could they do it on the internet alone if they wanted to? And 4,128 people said yes, and no was 1,393. Only a difference there of 1,135. Okay, so it's a big difference. 2,135 made the difference. So not a big deal. I guess nobody saw a problem for them, wasn't costing them anything, and it was important enough to be put on the ballot by the city. I guess they said, sure. And there, maybe that's the sort of total I should look at. It looks like about 6,300 votes on that issue, and not everybody votes on proposals, but maybe that's the total number of people voting in Dearborn Heights. They expected 19% to 20%, which would be disastrously low over there, and it looks like they might have got a few more than that. Now, in District 7, you could only vote on this if you were in Dearborn Heights District 7. The schools there wanted a tech improvement bond. It had gone down to defeat in the last special election. It passed this time by 46 votes. So only about 1,376 people, about exactly 1,376 people, unofficial, voted, and it won. It passed by 46. So the technology and security updates for District 7 schools has been approved and will happen. In Ecorse, the incumbent mayor won, but only by about 100-some votes. Incumbent clerk and treasurer won. The assessor won by 120 votes. Okay, and city council there in Ecorse, all the four incumbents came there, and they had another opening, and Roger Parker Sr., with only 635 votes, did win, along with the other five. There was five incumbents running, and Roger Parker Sr. came in ahead of the pack. By how much? Let's see. The next closest to 635 was 617. So he won by only 18 votes, folks. Whole city of Ecorse. This person got in the city council by the difference of 18 votes. I guess I'm making my point. In Flat Rock, the extremely popular mayor, Jonathan D. Dropiewski, was reelected by over 2-1 margin. So about 70%. Of the vote. City council there, a new person got on and an incumbent lost. A new person, Walter Little, was elected, along with Philip Roche and Christopher Rollett. Okay, one of the incumbents, Stephen Beller, did not make it, and he didn't make it by a matter of 48 votes. How about that's a different community. Okay, Gibraltar. All the incumbents there, city council and mayor, they were unopposed. Can you believe that? Unopposed. And guess who won? That's right. The incumbents. Gibraltar School District, what they call a sinking fund, which I've never been clear of, but I understand it's not a bad thing. But the sinking fund would be for the purpose of or construction or repair of school buildings, the improvement, development of sites, and any other purpose permitted by law. So that's for the school district, and it was approved, but by only 87 votes, 918 to 831. The road millage, however, went down to defeat by 286 votes, 1,361 to 1,075. Now, how in even Gros Isle, they don't want the roads fixed. They're in favor of helping the schools, but they don't want the roads fixed. John Conroy, who's now attending a special political conference here on campus, And he should be just finishing up listening to Debbie Stabenow, our Michigan State Senator, to Washington, D.C. She's making a presentation and should be finished up. We'll get a report from John when he swings back. But he can't understand this. Of course, there was only 28% of the voters turning out. Who knows how the other 72% might have voted if they were, you know, if they were going to vote. Maybe in that 72%, there was at least 287 people additionally out of thousands that actually wanted to see the roads fixed. Maybe they just assumed, oh, sure, we always fix the roads. We always help the schools. I'm not going to go vote. Well, you're not going to get your road fixed. Okay. And, okay, we're going back to, let's see, the top of the list on the other side of the page. A little confusing how it was printed out, but they're trying to save space. In Lincoln Park, retirement system for police officers and firefighters was voted down by 200 votes out of 3,200. So it was close. And that's quite a controversial issue. Of course, a lot of people say, all the negative comments that show up on website comment boxes, really brutal comments too. Is that the only place you can be nasty, folks, is on the internet? You can just be really, really nasty. And you think that's fine? You think that's intelligent? No, it's not intelligent. I can't respect somebody who is not intelligent and uses facts as the basis for their votes. I guess they don't want to help their police and firefighters. And I just wonder who they think is going to come and help them the next time they need help. I know it's not going to be either or, and I'm sure the dedicated police and fire officers that are left will come to help them, nonetheless, as best they can with diminished staff and facilities. Shame on you, Lincoln Park, or the small number of people that voted. Melvindale, yes, our HFC employee, Stacy Stritch, has been reelected almost 2-1, not quite, in her battle for being, as we said, the weak mayor, but no disrespect, of course, as I explained. She has a job to do, and she does it, and she's been elected for quite a few years now. So good luck down in Melvindale. Clerk was reelected there. A new treasurer candidate, Callie Hess, was elected. In the city council, they actually had... all four incumbents were reelected, and the two challengers, the two newbies, were Stephen Densmore and Michelle Land. That's in Melvindale. Riverview, neither candidate was the incumbent, but an Andrew Swift got 1,300-some votes to 900-some. In city council, three incumbents were reelected there in Riverview. Rockwood... No, and again, boggles my mind that there couldn't be other people in Rockwood that might want to run for office. I guess they don't pay enough. But the mayor was elected, and I guess people knew about the fact that there was only the incumbents on the ballot because there's only like 214 votes for the mayor. There's more people than that in Rockwood, maybe not many more. So who has to go vote when there's nobody else to vote for, right? Remember, you could always do a write-in. Yeah. And with so few people voting, you could become mayor with only 200 votes. Who would have guessed, you know? But Southgate, all incumbents. I think, whoops, nope. We got two new people, Philip Roche and Christopher Rollett. We're also elected. Along with incumbents. And in Southgate, they're renewing a levy for roads, and that passed monstrously, 3,100 to about 900. So I think 2-1 is always monstrous to me. Southgate Community School District, again, that was a bond issue, but it wouldn't cost people any more, even though they're asking for more and getting more. They refinance something or whatever, folks. So, in other words, you're getting more for the same amount of money. And that was, again, 2-1, almost 3,000 votes to 1,500 approved. In Trenton, Mayor Kyle Stack and a newbie in the clerk, Deborah Devitt, was elected, but otherwise it was incumbents all the way down. Let's see here. That's assessor's office. New assessor John Dahlquist was actually elected. That's strange. We don't elect an assessor in Dearborn. We appoint them. Anyway, city council looks like two incumbents return, and Nelson Perugi got elected to city council in Trenton. Is that Trenton? I got to double check. Yes, Trenton. Okay. Last but not least, Woodhaven says vote for not more than three, but guess what? Well, there were three people on the ballot. Okay. Yeah. And they all won. They were newbies for the city council in Woodhaven, apparently. They're not indicated to be incumbents, but they were the only three, so of course they all won. Woodhaven Brownstone shares a school district, and they had a bond proposal, and that did win, 1,762 to 1,103. So good for them. And, yes, congratulations to the News Herald staff on reporting the numbers in a timely manner, both before giving a great summary that I shared with you on this show before the election, and, of course, the summary and results after the election. It's about the only place to go to see how that was handled. So what about the roads in Michigan? Now, a lot of local communities decided to put more money into fixing the roads that they need to fix right now. And according to radio this morning, according to my colleague John Conroy, Governor Snyder has not yet signed that big House road funding plan. He has said it's positive, but needs quote-unquote extensive analysis. I would think so, because he refused to sign. That is, he vetoed the last proposal coming from the legislature. It was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, because it took $600 million from our present budget. And this one does the same. Of course, it doesn't say where they're going to take the money from. The people in favor of it say, yeah, but the state is getting rich. We're making $700 million more dollars each year from income of one sort or another than we used to than a couple years ago. So we really won't have to cut anything. But there are things you want to put money into, aren't there? Like fixing the roads. And let me say that this bill, even though it's $1.2 billion, which is the number that everybody keeps tossing around as the magic number, that was the magic number when Snyder first proposed it 3 or 4 years ago. And since then, the minimum number needed for 10 years until we can cut back a little bit and just maintain the roads better, because we have roads and bridges that are in such bad shape and even worse shape than 3 or 4 years ago when the $1.2 billion was coming out. The estimates are now $2.2 to $2.5 billion a year for 10 years is what's really needed. So this bill, number one, if the governor is listening, and I know he listens to all the podcasts from all the stations, local, non-commercial, independent stations in Michigan. Number one, it's not enough money. Number two, even the money that's there won't start kicking in until 2017 and not fully until 2021. And by that time, the experts say it'll be over $3 billion a year that we really need to spend for 10 years in order to catch up. Because things keep falling apart so much that they need more repair and more major repair that's more costly than ever before. And then there's the cutting of the budget for things that we actually need, which the legislature, in their wisdom, decided not to tell you how it was going to be cut. They'll decide that later, so nobody can get mad right now. Also, because it'll phase in starting in 2017 to 2021, they won't even be around thanks to term limits. So you won't know who to blame. Can't blame the people that are on the ballot in 2021 because they weren't there when this went in place. So it's like kicking the can down the road. Just so you don't get blamed, you can get reelected for another 2 years or whatever, and there you go. But Snyder's one concern, I understand, is that he wants to pass his bill to help dig the Detroit Public Schools out of the debt that his own managers, emergency financial managers for Detroit Public Schools, the last four are the ones responsible for the debt. because they didn't clean it up each year they got there. They said, well, let's just have it in payments over the future years. And those have built up and up and up. And now the massive debt has got to be paid by somebody. The Detroit schools can't do that. They don't have any people living in Detroit hardly anymore. And they're certainly not rich people, so it's not a matter of property taxes. So I think that he is going to try to work out a deal, and behind the scenes, I bet he is with a lot of Republicans up there, that if he passes this roads bill and make it look sort of good for them, oh, the state is fixing the roads. The state is fixing the roads. No, they're not really, not for years, and it's not enough money, and it won't work anyway, and those people won't even be there to blame in the future. Of course, you can remember their party, Republicans. You can remember that if you can remember anything in 2021, okay? By the way, all opinions in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, or administration. Alrighty. So we'll see. But he has not, Governor Snyder has not, as of this morning, has not signed that ridiculous, stupid, inadequate, unfair roads bill. But I think he's working behind the scenes to see if he can make a deal in getting Republicans who don't like Detroit and don't come from Detroit, basically, they weren't elected from Detroit districts, to pony up millions of dollars, maybe more than $100 million over a number of years, in order to bail them out of that debt that he imposed on them, or his managers did, for the last 5 years. So we'll see.
Right.
Yes, there is that political issues convention, the 12th annual Michigan Student Political Issues Convention happening today at Henry Ford College. It still has about another hour to go with some additional conversations going on. I think a sort of roundtable discussion from local elected representatives. John Conroy was there this morning. He said Debbie Dingell gave a fiery, almost progressive sounding speech. So I guess the Bernie Sanders has been influencing Hillary Clinton, getting her to go a little bit more left, a little more progressive on issues. And boy, he said he never heard Debbie Dingell speak about fixing things for the better, of course, and resolving the inequity in treatment of people in this country. Stronger than that half hour that she gave. I'm sorry we don't have permission to rebroadcast that, because, if we did, then somebody might find out what they'd say. If they give a conference or a speech and you can't record it, guess what? Can't blame them, right? And maybe there weren't any news writers there. I hope there is, because maybe we'll get some words quoted in the Press and Guide or the Times Herald next week. But it takes real reporters who can take notes for 6 to 7 hours in a row, who don't need a day job to survive, at least on Fridays, in order to give us that story. We'll get some comments from John if he's able to get here soon. From Craig Ferrand, also News Herald downriver. I wonder if I can get a subscription to the News Herald. It's almost more valuable to me than the Press and Guide, even though I live in Dearborn. Anyway, Craig Ferrand, a great columnist, this is what he has to say about elections. So I'm wrapping up the election stories here with this commentary. By the time you read this, our handful of local elections will be over. But we've just started the 12-month march to the 12-16 presidential election. So this is about elections past and elections to come, and the nonsensical sloganeering that inevitably arises every time. What was surprising to me, though, was that sloganeering raised its silly head in local elections. Usually we simply see signs and placards out with a name in big, bold letters, more often than not accompanied by elect or re-elect so-and-so to such-and-such a seat. Some, of course, don't even need that much info. Name recognition is coin of the realm when it comes to many races. So color me a bit surprised when this slogan appeared in one local campaign: Take Our City Back. Of course, at first blush, it reads like a rallying cry of rebellion. Throw the British out! But once that nonsense vanishes, you're left with the obvious question. Take our city back from whom? Aliens? Outside elements? Canada? For such is the risk of sloganeering. Unless you're clear, your message simply falls apart. Or should I add here, if you do any critical thinking about that stuff. In this case, for instance, anyone who has had the city all this time must be neighbors and fellow residents of the city, not outsiders. In fact, if I recall, whoever has been in charge of city government were themselves legitimately elected to office the last time around. So you're taking the city back? Not really, says Craig Ferran as he continues. You're just doing the same thing your predecessors did. You're running for office. But silly, meaningless sloganeering isn't limited to local campaigns. In fact, some of the greatest and emptiest sloganeering can be found in the presidential campaign of many a candidate. Take, if you will, this line. Make America great again. And I think we all know off the record here who spoke that, and it's his continuing slogan. Donald Trump. He was even able to get it copywritten. The U.S. Copyright Office thought it was so original that they gave him copyright protection, so nobody else can ever use that phrase ever again. And maybe rightly so, because who would want to use something, and I agree with Craig Ferran here, that means nothing by itself. So Craig Ferran says, I mean, make America great again. He says, what are we now, chopped liver? Such inanities are tiresome at the least and inflammatory at the extreme. America has never been greater economically, militarily than at any other time in its history, says Craig. Our social trends dictate to the rest of the world. Our music dominates international airwaves. Our reality TV distorts real life like no other. Great? Where do we go from here? Oh, of course, there's that little thing called poverty, and there's pay inequity in the workplace between men and women, and the middle class is being more marginalized by the moment. But I'll bet you dimes to donuts that not a single politician is referring to these shortcomings when they talk about becoming great again. In fact, most wouldn't try to define great if their political lives depended on it. Why? Because once a politician defines the word great, people would realize he/she were irrelevant in the larger discussion about America's future. That's what makes sloganeering so much fun and dangerous. These phrases are without meaning. Like so many baseball statistics, which lead neophytes to assume something is profound, when in fact, it is mere trivia. So when a politician, local or national, reverts to sloganeering, keep in mind that it's window dressing at an open, at an empty store. And he has more opinions, but you'll have to read thenewsherald.com. To finish that up, I've been joined in the studio by our WHR News Director, John Conroy, who's out there beating the bushes for news stories, actually gone to an auditorium next door. I've already talked, John, about the Michigan Student Political Issues Convention and some of your comments from other representatives this morning. But what about Debbie Stabenow? You're hot off that presentation. So how liberal is she sounding these days? Wait a minute. Let's get your microphone on. Go.
Yes, Jay. Debbie Stabenow was also pretty fiery. She talked about some of the same things that Debbie Dingell did. Democracy best when everyone's involved. We all need to be engaged. Very encouraged by the turnout that was there. Everyone, in her mind, seemed to be engaged right away.
I was engaged once, and unfortunately it led to marriage. But
uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, she also said that democracy is not a spectator sport. Expect out of the government, but expect first from yourself.
Ooh.
That's one of her biggest comments.
That's a good phrase. Okay, so nothing specific. She's not running for re-election next year, I don't think. I don't know. You know, they elect senators once every 6 years, so I'm not sure. I know we just elected the other senator. Who the heck is it? Oh, that's embarrassing. The other U.S. senator? It's not Levin. He left. Oh, it's, what's his name? He was a representative out there.
Morris Hood?
No. He was a representative to Congress. Gary Peters.
Oh, Gary Peters.
So there, folks, don't say I couldn't remember. It just took a little while. Okay. Yeah. The new U.S. Senator, Gary Peters. And so usually, since they do and it's every 6 years, so there's bound to be an off year somewhere in there, depending on how the rotation goes. So she may not be up for re-election, and therefore she just has platitudes. By the way, and I'm sorry, it's just good slogans. They sound good. I wanted to go back, you know, because in Craig Ferran's, just for a moment, comment here about sloganeering is alive, well, and irrelevant. He talks about let's make America great again, which is the trademark slogan of Donald Trump. However, Trump has just released his new book today, I believe.
Oh.
And, of course, it's talking about more specifically his plans as the next president, of course. Most politicians do that at the last minute as they're running for office. They release a book that's sort of pointed in the direction of, yes, vote for me, you know. Well, the book is entitled Crippled America. But, of course, that, you know, if that's the case, which is a real downer, and it is strange for any politician to say that right now we're so exceptional and we need to stay exceptional. That's usually the national politicians, what they say. Although, to my recollection, Barack Obama said we've got hope, audacity, but, you know, we're not so well off when he was first elected. And but for a politician to come out and say that the present situation is a crippled America is pretty negative for any major politician to go. Again, it's just a slogan, so we're looking for the specifics of that. But even the Democrats are pointing out a lot of things that should be changed. So anything else from Debbie?
Not so much. Debbie Stabenow. Debbie Stabenow.
Or we
Debbie
should Daniel. Just call her Senator Stabenow.
Senator Stabenow.
All right.
There we go.
Differentiate.
The only thing that I also gleaned from her was good leaders find common thread with all the folks to get stuff done. The one thing I want to make sure of that I express is that the students, this was a student-driven convention that that I was at, and they just decided what the first or what the top five issues were with the student group that was there, which I got to believe numbered over 250 people.
And, of course, these are college-level students. It might make a difference to the preferences of high school students, but college students are a lot closer to being able to vote, if not voters, now. Yeah.
I believe and most of them are over the age of 18. That's true. Anyhow, the top five issues were affordable education, number one. Mm-hmm. Gun control was right up there. Hmm. Homelessness and racism / equality. They were debating the issue. They were debating whether which one is should be higher priority or eliminate one of those words and just say equality. Mm-hmm. And then the last is health care. Affordable health care.
Okay. Maybe that's because with Obamacare, they think they've already got it established, but it's not covering nearly enough. It's not universal health care, of course.
Right.
And at least it's in their top five. Yeah. It's interesting, affordable education, because they see that what they're facing is, on average, an education debt of up to $80,000, which will put them in debt for the rest of their lives. Because they'll never be able to pay it off, and therefore the rest of their lives will be, their possibilities, their choices will be lessened because they can't, you know, have what they call a higher standard of living. Doesn't mean you need a car, but most people do in Detroit area because we have almost no effective metro transit system.
Well, I can tell you from my own personal experience with my son, I've probably told you this before, that he looks like he's going to be paying debts back till age 58.
Right. That's why I said the new generation is probably going to be stuck with a debt all their life. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they are relieved of their debts when they die. I hope that's a clause in their contract. Otherwise, they're the people that they give their money to. What is that called? People that get money from your death. Your loved ones, anyway, your family, whoever you give what remaining money you have.
Your inheritors,
yeah. Yes. They get an inheritance of having to pay off your debts. Now, it is true that right now, if you have a credit card debt and you die, that's still got to come out of your estate.
That's still coming.
Your inheritors have to pay off all your debts. And I don't think it should be that way. But now that, you know, it looks like that, unlike your son, who's in his 50s and just now, but of course he went on to higher ed. He's a lawyer, I believe, right?
Right.
Yeah, so he had a little extra than the four-year person did, but still, you know, he's in his mid-50s, and that's awful to be burdened by that. Think of what he could have accomplished, traveled, learned, studied, experienced, if he hadn't had that much debt.
Well, he'll be about essentially my age when his debt is paid off.
And of course, as we know, Bernie Sanders running for president as a Democrat, as a social Democrat, as he calls himself now, accurately, is all for finding a way to have free college tuition for all that qualify in the future. nationwide.
Forgive those debts.
Well, and that's the other question. What do you do about the money that's already been spent out there? To forgive it, the banks are going to rise up in anger. Oh, you're killing us, and you need us, and you can't do without banks, and you'll cause another crisis. Because I think it's somewhere between $1 and $2 trillion of student debt now. I mean, part of that 16 or 17, or is it 18 trillion that the United States owes? It's huge. It's more debt than I think credit card debt in general. So it's just not right. It's unfair. And another thing came up a couple days ago, and they were discussing it on some of the talk shows this morning on WDET. A fact just came out is that white men in middle age, which they're saying is 45 to 55 approximately, somewhere in there, are dying more. Some. I think the number was 23% more die at that age from all causes, but mostly health causes, not necessarily suicides. And it's just unbelievable. Why would that particular group have such an increase? And it's been increasing for that group apparently over the last 20 years. And they say the frustration of not having a life because of the debts that are built up. And you say, why white people? Isn't it tougher for minorities or majorities like women? Well, they're not quite sure about that, except maybe the white men in that age group, it's because they expected a lot more and they didn't get it. And that causes them to eat less well and do crazy things earlier. And, you know, I don't know. Nobody knows for sure. It's complex, but it seems like something that deserves being talked about and trying to do some research on. But that's the problem. Whatever opinions you have doesn't really matter. Although, John, you have an opinion?
Well, you're here for aging, Jay. We're both over that.
Yeah, I'm past it. Yeah, but I'm in the age of when white men commit the most suicide, though.
Oh, okay.
So watch out for that. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, just to beware of that. Yep. Okay, so that's a very exciting event here at Henry Ford College. Again, the 12th year, sponsored by the Michigan Democracy Institute Consortium, which is the other colleges that have participated in that too. But it's located here at Henry Ford College. And you said, of course, President Jensen gave a presentation this morning to them and the League of Women Voters.
Yes, and one more thing I wanted to say regarding Debbie Dingell. She talked about all people at the table are to be engaged, work together, and hold the elected folks accountable. Make sure you hold these folks that already have positions accountable and make it your business to get involved.
Yeah, you know, I just went over all the election results for Downriver from the News Herald paper for 25 minutes, and It's strange, and I think very upsetting to me, that in many cities there were no challengers to any position. All the incumbent mayors, clerks, city council, whatever, got reelected because there was nobody else running against them.
Yeah.
And yet, if they're really democratically responding to the needs of all their people and they're accessible, you know, that you can go and talk to them, go to the council meetings, go to the mayor in person, and they will respond to you and do what you want. Well, I think then, I have to say, that would be fine to reelect the incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that just because you're incumbent, you know everything. There's always room for somebody with new ideas or new approaches that might work better. Even if things are already good, you might want to change to somebody else.
Get a shot.
So we'll see. Anyway. Okay, we just have 12-13 minutes here before Highway 61, the best in the blues, starts up again for today for 4 hours from 2 to 6 p.m. with Joanne Kay. We always look forward to that. Great music, a lot of local music. And now's the time to mention, of course, our local music event, John. Mm-hmm. I waited for you to get here because you're our local music representative, since you get to a lot of things.
Yes.
Local, but our fall 2015 fundraiser is at a small little bar, so we can't get thousands of people in, but please come anyway and pay at the door. I don't know, and you know, stand inside for a little while, I guess. It's going to be four blues artists, bands that are performing They're performing for free for us, and we're only asking a donation of $5 a person at the door. It is 21 or over. It is a bar called formerly called Halligan's, which under new management is now called Whiskey Bar, and that's at 22100 West Warren Avenue, just west of Outer Drive. Okay, technically it's Detroit, but it's pretty much by itself. I think there's another tavern or something across the street, but free parking. And this is a great selection of artists who are all local, and they're just great, great artists. Danny Croja is going to be first. He's going to do sort of an acoustic set, and he looks like a really young man. Of course, everybody does compared to me, but nonetheless, he's finally released, even though he's always been performing indie rock with a little bit of, I'd say, historic blues, you know, traditional blues sounds. And now he finally, in the last year or so, has released an all-blues album on Jack White's label. I can't remember the title of that, of his label. But anyway, Jack White, Detroit artist, of course, White Stripes. Now, do you remember Jack White? Okay. His company was based in Nashville, but they're opening an office in Detroit now. Maybe to actually get closer to and help sign up and promote Detroit artists a little more. Give a little back, Jack. That's what I say, because it rhymes. But Danny Croja, it should be a great set. And then Dale Robertson Band, well-known, big sound. Tasha Owens, great blues vocalist, is going to be singing with Big Al's Blues Cruise behind her. And then Big Al's Blues Cruise is going to finish off the night with special guest vocalist Ivory Darnell, who has just knocked the socks off of people who are wearing socks when they've seen him and heard him. Great voice, sort of discovered by one of the blues jams sponsored by the Detroit Blues Society. And this event is co-sponsored with the Detroit Blues Society, I should say, and we thank them for their help setting this up. So, wow, what entertainment. There's also, of course, beverages and food available for an extra charge. We don't get a cut on that, but come and enjoy the evening, or at least one of these four great bands. It starts at 9 p.m. I don't know, it might go to 1, 2 o'clock with all these people there. Come and show your support for WHFR and local live music. I'm going to be there. John is going to be there. Oh, my gosh. All the important people are going to be there.
And, of course, great food. I've sampled their burgers before.
Okay.
You can't go wrong.
That's John's opinion. But, no, I've been there, too, and I've enjoyed their food, too.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm always into food somehow. It's not much bigger than some of our other venues, as I said. I think it seats about 100 people. But maybe just come for an hour, say hello, listen to some great blues, and go on to the rest of your evening. That is tomorrow night, Saturday night, and that is November 7th. And that is at Whiskey Bar, 22100 West Warren, just a block west of Outer Drive. Hope to see you there. Help support WHFR. And, okay, John, you had some top stories. Maybe I've already covered them, but
I want to give a quick plug for the Top Dog. Mm-hmm. Joe's Top Dog tonight has the Rich Michaels Trio, as well as Ursula Walker, vocalist. Mm-hmm. And they've been getting great turnouts on Friday nights there, and they've been plugging us as well, Jay. So we're doing a good, working well together.
Right.
With their jazz nights on Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a quick thing here. Make a Senior Smile Day is tomorrow.
Hmm.
Wayne County Commissioner Diane Webb will host her 7th annual Make a Senior Smile Day on November 7th. On that day, volunteers work on yard chores, such as raking leaves and for senior citizens and disabled veterans in the 8th District, which covers Dearborn Heights, and et cetera. Seniors must be income eligible and not able to perform the work. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very rewarding event and good for our senior citizens and disabled veterans, Webb said.
We mentioned before that several times in other shows, but it is a unique event. It features female comic artists, okay? The writers, scripters, drawers, painters, whatever, designers that are involved in producing comic books as well as graphic novels. It's called Comic Con, C-O-M-I-Q-U-E, I guess, to emphasize the difference from the other comic book conventions, which don't use IQUE after the com part. And it's going to be at the Arab American National Museum because they have a big facility for that now. And so that's tomorrow, as well as I just found out after many, many years, a Depression era glass show coming to Dearborn. I have a small collection of Depression glass. When it used to be every year at the center, they used to have a big convention there, Michigan Depression Glass Society. There is such a thing. Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is the relatively fragile glassware that often in the 30s and 40s came free with a box of soap. Came with your laundry detergent or whatever. If you were careful about opening it, didn't dump it all out at one time and break the... Well, anyway, you get a piece of Depression glass. And so people bought a lot of soap, I guess, in order to have a full set of dishware. And cups and spoons and all the accessories, it was all available. And so now it's very collectible. Also because it's rare, because it's a lot of it's very fragile. But there's some really interesting designs. I have not a full set, but I have pieces from some sort of Art Nouveau thing. And so it's going to be tomorrow, and it's at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center from 10 to 5 and 10 to 4 on Sunday. So it's just something different to do, is to look at Depression-era glass. I will say that I've stopped collecting because I can't afford the glassware anymore. Okay, I don't know if prices have come down after 2008, but oh my gosh, for a teacher anyway, 5-6 years ago, I went to their one of their glass shows and said I just can't afford anymore. Also, I'm out of shelf space anyway. So, all right, a couple more little stories here. Henry Ford College, where we are located. They're going to be adding volleyball and wrestling teams in 2016. So rah-rah sports here. Competition will begin in the fall of 2016. Volleyball will return after a three-year hiatus. We'll join basketball and softball as the third women's sport available at HFC. And also wrestling will join golf as a co-ed varsity sport after participating at a club team for the past as a club team for the past 2 years. So we'll be officially a college wrestling club, and again a co-ed sort of thing, and I don't quite understand that doesn't mean in wrestling that men will wrestle women, does it? I'm sure it doesn't, but in any event, we've got those two teams being added, so don't let the sports get in the way of your studies, folks, but yes, that can be fun to do in college, and sometimes people that are good at sports and are also smart and want to study, but they can't get here without that scholarship. So maybe that'll help a few people get to college. Let's see here. We talked about the roads plan. Okay. Just a few minutes to go before the end of the hour, but here's a commentary from Jack Lessenberry. And... just, I believe it certainly. Voters are smarter than the politicians. So let's take a listen to how Jack phrases it.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Two things happened yesterday that starkly illustrate what's right and what's wrong with politics and government in this state. First, we had an election, or more accurately, a whole flock of elections. Turnout wasn't great, despite the beautiful weather. But the vast majority of the voters behaved responsibly and reasonably. They decisively rejected the comeback attempts of the two disgraced legislators, Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat. Corser, the more flamboyantly obnoxious, got less than 4% of the vote. This should be the last time we pay much attention to either of them. In Flint, Mayor Dane Walling insulted voters' intelligence by claiming he had nothing to do with the ill-fated switch to Flint River water, despite pictures showing him happily pushing the button to start the process. The voters overwhelmingly chose businesswoman Karen Weaver. In Southfield, a majority black city, the race was between Ken Siver, a white, openly gay man, and a black female candidate, Sylvia Jordan. Siver had his signs destroyed, and someone stuffed black voters' mailboxes with racist anti-black flyers designed to make them vote for the black candidate. It didn't work. Siver, who ran an ethical campaign, won in a landslide. Most school bond and millage proposals won as well. but if the people deserve praise, the politicians deserve anything but. Yesterday, both houses of the legislature passed a thoroughly irresponsible road repair plan, which seems certain to do a great deal of damage to the state while failing to meaningfully fix the roads. To say this was a case of putting lipstick on a pig would be an insult to both lipstick and pigs. The governor's tried for years to come up with $1.2 billion a year to fix Michigan's roads. Actually, experts say the real cost of restoring them to anything like decent shape now would be more than $2 billion a year. The smartest and fairest way to get that would have been to increase the state gas tax. But reasonable is a dirty word to his legislative colleagues, almost as dirty as political courage. What they passed and what the governor says he will sign won't even produce the full $1.2 billion until sometime after the year 2020. Half of that is to come from unspecified cuts to the state's already strapped general fund. What will be cut? The lawmakers took the coward's way out and left that to future legislatures to decide after most of them will be gone. You don't have to have a doctorate in economics to figure out where those cuts are bound to come from. Education, revenue sharing, health, public safety. Additionally, to make up for the tiny bit of new revenue produced by a small increase in the gas tax and vehicle registration fees, it includes an income tax cut that is supposed to start in 8 years. Much of this is fiction, of course. Future legislatures will undoubtedly change all this, though for better or worse, no one can say. Senate Minority Leader Jim Ananick said, "This plan won't fix our roads. It will, however, create new problems that will need to be fixed later." He's right about that. But fixing problems is exactly what our term-limited and gerrymandered legislature pretty much always fails to do.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Well, that pretty much finishes up the hour for the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for listening. This was our election special wrap-up, but not for Dearborn, because we didn't have a chance to vote on anything. So I guess everything is just great in Dearborn. Isn't that wonderful? That's great. Okay. Well, I hope everything is great for you out there. And this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you can listen to the show anytime you want to. Again, just to get the facts right when you disagree with us, make sure it's really what we said. Oh, thank you. At WHFR.FM, click on Talk Shows, click on the WHFR Journal, and select the date. Well, take care out there. And for those that did vote, thank you very much. But don't forget to keep on top of the people you elected. Keep letting them know what you think, what you believe, and what you want. Yeah, that's how to do it. Goodbye for now. And here comes Highway 61.